The clock is ticking toward legal marijuana for personal use in Oregon. The big day is July 1st. Voters had the easy part. All they had to do was vote. But the Oregon Liquor Control Commission, designated as the regulating agency for pot, has to come up with rules and regulations under the law to make it all work. OLCC is taking input around the state. After a brief pause, a series of listening meetings resumes tomorrow night with a meeting in Ashland, 7 to 9 at Southern Oregon University, followed by a meeting Thursday in Klamath Falls, 10 to noon at Oregon Tech. Rob Patridge is the chair of the Oregon Liquor Control Commission and Klamath County District Attorney, so a busy guy, but taking time out of his day to talk to us here on the Jefferson Exchange once again. Welcome, Rob.
Good morning.
Good morning. Just in general, how big a task is this to come up with the rules to implement the marijuana law?
You know, it's a very difficult needle to thread, certainly. There's only two states in the nation that have it. We're trying to borrow information from them as well. But we're putting up a new industry here in Oregon, and our law, as Measure 91, is much different from what happened in Washington and Colorado. So we're trying to surf and listen to what people have to say, and that's why we'll be in Ashland tomorrow night.
And how different, Rob, in which ways different from the Washington and Colorado laws?
Well, you know, we have a medical marijuana system that's a little bit more mature than Washington. Our tax is very, very different. We're taxing at the grower level, where in Washington and Colorado they tax at multiple levels. So it's really, really hard to decide how we're going to move away from the black market into a more regulated market here in Oregon.
Is there any one, is that the bigger sticking point, the biggest sticking point so far, figuring out the whole, the tax part of the equation?
Well, the tax part of the equation, the voters passed. The legislature yesterday, we were in front of their legislative committee, was certainly talking about making some tweaks to that. We don't know what we're going to get for the next 6 months, so it's really, really hard to decide how the OLCC can move forward. That's why we're out on the road listening to growers, listening to local leaders, listening to law enforcement, and inviting everybody in to have the best ideas as we move forward and do this in Oregon's way.
You have had four of these meetings already, including one in Eugene. What's the issue that seems to get raised the most so far?
You know, there's a lot of interest. About 85% of the people that show up at these meetings are really people who are interested in the marijuana economy. So it's those with an economic interest that are there. What we're hearing from them is some kind of protectionist kinds of things. They want it to be only... They want growers to be required to have Oregon residency for 2 to 4 years related to having a license to grow or sell marijuana. So those are some of the issues we're hearing. We're talking a lot about the edibles and whether those should be regulated or not, and how they should be regulated, packaging for kids. Those are some of the kinds of things that we're having a lot of conversation about, as well as advertising. How should this be advertised? Where should these be located? So it's a joint effort between the state and local communities, for sure.
That residency one is an interesting one. Are there any proscriptions in the law as it was passed that indicate any need for residency for a certain period of time?
There is nothing in the law that requires residency, but the proponents are pushing it very, very hard, and we certainly have a robust and this entrenched medical marijuana industry that I think has a lot of interest in rolling into the recreational industry, and so they're trying to protect their turf for sure.
But as I understand it, the way the law passed, the medical marijuana thing is basically left untouched by it?
It certainly is left untouched by Measure 91, but there's some interest in trying to merge the systems. It certainly makes it difficult to regulate an industry when you have such a huge amount of marijuana going through an unregulated medical side versus a regulated side that has a tax on it. So we're concerned about things going to the black or gray market as a result of not having a regulated growing system in the state.
So, Rob Patridge, when you talk about the difference between medical and recreational and the desire of some people to merge the systems, I mean, this would sort of rise to above the level of just rulemaking. This is the kind of change the legislature or voters would have to make, wouldn't it be?
Absolutely. It's a change that they're certainly talking about. It's certainly a hotly contested issue. But as a regulatory body, it's certainly something we have to bring up. As we've gone to Washington and Colorado and talked to their regulators, they've certainly said that makes it really, really difficult to regulate when you have a medical system that is virtually unregulated on the grow side. You know, basically in Oregon, the only regulation we have related to the medical side is these dispensaries. But the marijuana coming into the dispensaries, we have no control over. There's no standards for testing. You know, and part of our concern is, too, that we would launch a large public education campaign. We're very, very concerned not only with those under 21 realizing the effects of marijuana, but frankly, those who are mature adults don't know how to take marijuana, and that's what we've seen. We've seen lots of cases in Washington State and Colorado where people, for example, are eating edibles. They'll eat a pot brownie, and they won't immediately feel the effects, so they'll eat another one, and then they're overdosing and winding up in an emergency room. We have a responsibility, if we're going to deregulate and decriminalize marijuana, to at least provide some public education so that it's not put on the backs of healthcare providers as well.
Rob Patridge is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, the chair of the Oregon Liquor Control Commission and Klamath County District Attorney. We're talking to him in his role as the OLCC chair, as the OLCC takes takes comments from around the state of Oregon about implementing the new personal marijuana law, the recreational marijuana law, not the medical one. Meetings are Wednesday, February 18th, tomorrow, 7 to 9 p.m. in Ashland at Southern Oregon University, Thursday, 10 a.m. to noon at Klamath Falls at the Institute of Technology, Oregon Institute of Technology, moving on to Bend, Beaverton, Clackamas, and Newport after that. You can join us on the Jefferson Exchange with questions or comments now for Rob Patridge, 800-838-3760 throughout the listening area, or by email jx@jeffnet.org. Here is Steve in Eugene. Welcome to the Exchange.
Okay, well, to begin with, I was going to ask, why can't we have marijuana bars just like alcohol bars, as opposed to limiting it to home? But you mentioned one word that sort of changed my whole train of thought. While I was working on the medical marijuana petition, I was looking through what literature there was out on it, and there was a contemporary JAMA, Journal of the American Medical Association, article by a guy out of Harvard, Dr. Greenspan, or Spoon. And in that article, he said the overdose on, to overdose on marijuana, you'd have to eat 1,500 pounds of it. Now, I don't think anybody's going to do that, so I question your usage of the word overdose on marijuana, because it's rather hard to do that. And also, I still want to know why, you know, since it's been known since the 30s, when the LaGuardia report came out, that marijuana is a much less pernicious drug than alcohol, you know, why we can't have public meeting places where people can get together and socialize just like in a bar, maybe in a conjunction with a bar, and have the same rules that apply to alcohol, which is a much more lethal drug.
Mm-hmm. Okay, let's get a response then. Let's move on to that. Steve, thanks
apply
for the call.
To marijuana.
All right, thanks, Steve.
So Jeff, there's a lot of questions in there. First, there are only four license types that were approved. Having a public place or like a bar-like environment is not a license that was approved by Measure 91, so the OLCC couldn't regulate that. We were in front of the legislative committee yesterday talking about one of the issues was related to having a bar, like a marijuana kind of bar. We also need other licenses. We need an R&D license so people can do R&D related to marijuana and its effects on the medical side as well as the commercial side. We also need a testing license. So the legislature is considering a lot of tweaks to Measure 91 because we didn't have the benefit of Colorado and Washington. And this is a new and emerging industry. So there's a lot of things that are being considered. As to the effects, we certainly have talked to the industry, and people in the industry who grow for a profession are concerned about overdosing. I'm not sure as to the medical pieces of that, but we do have an obligation to have a public campaign for education. certainly the marijuana today isn't the ditch weed of the 1970s. It is much more powerful, and they have all kinds of extracts and other things that make the THC, you know, 90% plus, in some cases in very small candy-like kinds of configurations. So those are all things that we need to look at as we continue to move forward at the OLCC, and that's why we're out listening to the public and seeking input.
That R&D part is interesting. I noticed that there is a PowerPoint available at the OLCC site, which is the basic framework for what goes on at these meetings. And that includes a page about the fact that there are still, obviously this is still illegal. Marijuana is under federal law, but there have been some guidelines delivered from the feds. One of the things that happened while marijuana has been identified as a Schedule I narcotic is that research and development has been basically banned by it. Is there any leeway for that from this list of information you got from the feds?
Well, we're trying to work collaboratively with the federal government. Congressman Blumenauer was in yesterday testifying before the committee ahead of the OLCC testifying. So I think that there's interest in a bipartisan manner to take a look at this. There's some interest in unscheduling this from a Schedule 1 controlled substance to a Schedule 2 controlled substance, which would alleviate a lot of the issues related to marijuana. But it's certainly an issue that's fraught with legal consequences. As a DA, I certainly understand the criminality and the criminal side of what goes on, too. So it's difficult at best to try and determine, and we're trying to work with the legislature, and I think they have a keen interest in trying to put in place a framework for the research and development in the future. You know, and the website you talked about is marijuana.oregon.gov, and we'd really encourage people to sign up there, Jeff. We've got over 12,000 now email subscribers related to marijuana. We've had 16,000 people fill out a survey that was there, and we've had over 150,000 hits on that website. That's the single clearinghouse if people want to get engaged and get involved, that we encourage them to go to marijuana.oregon.gov.
Well, whoever thought there would have been a day we'd see marijuana.gov, but there it is. Rob Patridge is our guest on the Jefferson Exchange, chair of the Oregon Liquor Control Commission and Klamath County District Attorney. We're talking about the process of holding meetings to implement the rules under which recreational marijuana will be allowed in Oregon starting July 1st. 800-838-3760 if you'd like to join us by phone, by email, jx@jeffnet.org. Here's a call from Urban in Cresswell. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange.
Yes, thanks for taking my call. Excuse me. You've covered it a little bit, but has there been any thought to regulating the potency of, you know, reducing the THC content of whatever is going to be sold? You know, you do that with alcohol. It seems like beer and wines have to be in a certain stage, and, you know, hard liquors can, I guess, so kind of all over. But, you know, to reduce the risk of what you've described as, you know, overindulgence. And second question is kind of a sneaker, but what are you going to do about the bootleggers?
All right.
And I'll take my question off the air.
Thanks, Urban. Appreciate that. So, Rob, we got limits to THC and bootleggers.
Yeah, so we haven't really talked about limits on THC, though there's been some legislative discussion about that, but we are hearing that. Well, Washington and Colorado have both done, and I think Oregon will take the same or similar approach, is to really have a dosage amount. And so when we get to control the packaging and labeling and testing. So I think that that will take place during the testing, and then we'll say, you know, this is a dosage amount of X, Y, or Z. And I think that that will, that's part of the public education that we need to engage in as we move forward. As to bootlegging, OLCC has requested, it wasn't specifically allowed in the legislation that was passed, Measure 91, that was passed by initiative. The OLCC requested formally that the legislature give us peace officer authority related to marijuana regulation. We have that in alcohol. We don't have people running around with guns. We merely allow our agents to move forward with an investigation, then be able to hand that investigation off to local government. We're also talking with local law enforcement and the Oregon State Police related to putting together a task force related to marijuana, and we're not calling it bootlegging, but you know, dealing with illegal grows. You know, we have a problem. Even in alcohol, we last year conducted Viner decoy operation into about 15% of our facilities. Of those facilities, only 81% are under compliance. So about 90 people of the people we tested served alcohol to minors. We don't want that same thing happening with marijuana, so that's why we need some additional authority that we've asked the legislature for.
Given how long it's been illegal under federal law, I mean, is there just a lack of information? I mean, you know, things like the potency of it is greater than it used to be, but it sounds like there's still a lot of wiggle room for bits of information that if this had been a legal drug for years, you'd know more about it.
Yeah, I think that there's not a lot because there has been a ban on research and development related to marijuana. So it certainly has made it very, very difficult for some, is what I've been told.
All right, let's take some more calls here. We have Jim in Grants Pass on the line. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Rob Patridge from the OLCC.
Yes, good morning. You kind of answered my question, because many of us in our 60s and older are hoping that it could be available in about 1972 potency and labeled that way, because many people like to just, as the man said, sit around and discuss an idea and, you know, absorb the facets of an idea, not get in arguments about opinions. And that's why the, you know, 40, 45-year-old potency was good. Thank you.
All right. Thanks for that, Jim. Appreciate it. Interesting that we talk about potency again and the THC levels. He mentioned the labeling, and that is part of the domain of OLCC, right? You get the advertising and the labeling. That's part of what you're able to regulate?
Absolutely. That's a lot of what those are going to be the difficult things. We don't regulate those at the liquor level. All those are regulated at the federal level. Alcohol labels that go on every single bottle have to be approved at the federal level. So we don't even have the mechanisms in place. So that's going to be part of what OLCC is going to have to do related to marijuana. And, you know, it's interesting as I think through people saying, well, we should have, you know, 1970s potency and other things. You know, there's all these throwback kind of things that happen, and I think that the market is going to make a decision on what's going on related to what's going to be sold. If people are calling out for low-level marijuana, just like they called out for low-tar cigarettes, there's going to be a market there that I think the industry is going to be interested in filling, and we'll be labeling those THC levels.
Sort of like the throwback Pepsi cans. We'll have the throwback pot.
That's right.
Well, like we have the throwback Pepsi and the throwback Mountain Dew cans that show up on the store shelves, we might have the throwback pot. It's got the same potency as the 1972 stuff or something. I think we might see this down the road. Rob Patridge, what is the timeline again? Because July 1st, it's legal for personal use, but there's the retail thing. It phases in after that, right?
Right. So July 1st, we're calling it the home grow provisions of the legislation. We have to start taking licenses January 5th of 2016 for the commercial side, for the, you know, for the grows, for the processing, for the wholesaling and the retailing. There are four license types that were approved. So we're supposed to start taking license types then. Depending on what the legislature gives us, we are certainly trying to keep within the spirit of what Oregonians voted on, and we're trying to hit that deadline for sure. But it's unlikely that that marijuana would be available in a retail environment until probably the last half of 2016, just because people have to grow the marijuana, they have to process it, package it, then get it into retail outlets, and that's going to take a period of time for that to happen.
All right, here's another call from Bill in Medford. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange with Rob Patridge, the OLCC chair.
Good morning, Rob. I know you're working hard and you're doing a good job, I believe, at what the people of Oregon, majority of them, decided. But I want to note, of course, that there's a sizable minority of people who consider marijuana to be a harmful substance. I'm one of those. And would you talk a little bit about the local option that's available in the law that permits a city or a county to determine not to sell it?
All right. Thanks for that, Bill. Appreciate it. Rob?
Absolutely. There's a local option that was provided for in the measure for local jurisdictions to opt out. Mr. Mansfield, who was just on the phone asking the question, is an attorney and well-versed, and I served on the Medford City Council with him, and he's a he's a brilliant lawyer who I've enjoyed working with over the years. He is exactly right. What it requires is 10% of the voting, the registered voters in the area, to sign a petition to then put it, the measure, before the local voters to vote on. It can't be a city council-related measure. I think there's going to be a lot of litigation, however. We heard presentations by the Association of Oregon Counties and the League of Oregon Cities yesterday here in Salem, both of which took the tack that they don't have to just use that opt-out. That's one of the options. So there's going to be a lot of litigation that's going to occur. Again, this makes it difficult for the Oregon Liquor Control Commission to do its job because it's hard to stand up a program when we don't know if jurisdictions are even going to be opted in. You know, it passed in only 14 of the 36 Oregon counties, and so it's going to be interesting to see as local jurisdictions go forward. I appreciate the fact that every jurisdiction, just like in alcohol, counties could opt out and cities could opt out if they didn't want alcohol in their jurisdiction as well. So it's done in a very similar manner.
But if a county opted out, that would just affect the unincorporated areas, not the actual, not areas within city limits?
The county could do the entire, I believe, could do the entire county, countywide.
I can see why this gets to be a very highly detailed process. And I mean, does it come? How do you divide the workload up between commissioners and staff? I mean, the staff come up with the ideas, and commissioners say, "Eh, yes or no," or I don't know. Let's see how that works. Or I mean, how does the process go on?
You know, right now it's we're certainly the commission. There's a 5-member lay commission, so we have 5 members like myself who have other jobs that they do during the day, and we're all trying to get up to speed on this. We've hired staff, and we are proceeding to try and listen to the staff recommendation, going around the state, listening to people, and then we're going to have a series of rulemaking hearings. And that's why people go to marijuana.oregon.gov so we can hear and get the best expert advice. We're also going to be in the process of forming a rules advisory committee to put our rules in place, but we're going to use experts in various fields that can advise the commission. So it's a multi-pronged approach, as well as waiting for the legislature to act, because we know that they're going to do something.
All right, a lot of work ahead. Rob Patridge is the chair of the Oregon Liquor Control Commission. Thanks so much for joining us today on the Jefferson Exchange.
Thank you.
You bet. The meeting's again Wednesday, February 18th, tomorrow, 7 to 9 at Southern Oregon University in the Stevenson Union in Ashland, and Thursday, 10 in the morning till noon at the Klamath Falls Oregon Institute of Technology at the Auditorium on Campus Drive.